You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Hey, buddies, it is the Massive Report podcast, and it is brought to you by Saucy Brewworks. Saucy Brewworks at 443 West 3rd Avenue. We're excited to get in there and have some beers. We know our delicious. I'm sorry, I'm trying to read this copy from Patrick Murphy, and it is just riddled with spelling errors and everything. I should have gone with Ori's. What I will say is I went and got some Saucy Brewworks beer. My wife and I went out for the first time last Friday in about a year, and we went to the Bud Dairy Barn, and they had some Saucy Brewworks beer on tap. I got it there. It was 8% alcohol. My wife drove home. It was delicious, though. Encourage all of you to get sauced responsibly at Saucy Brewworks, our sponsor, and we will be looking forward to gathering there in person in some time. And they are located again at 443 West 3rd Avenue. Great sponsors. Also have great beer with great sauce, or great beer, great pizza with great sauce, too. We've got a lot to talk about. We are been off for a week. We are without Brian Williams. I'm so sorry. Brian Phillips, he's in our thoughts as he will be joining us back. It is Bart Logan here, pinch hitting for him. We've got Ori Benatar. We've got Alex Stanek. We've got Patrick Murphy. And we have a special guest to kick us off, Eddie Razo of the Rayados 90 podcast. He's going to be giving us a little scouting report on Crew's CONCACAF Champions League opponent this Wednesday as they're taking on Monterrey. And Eddie, let's just kick it off with you, go straight into you here. Crew play Monterrey here in the second round of the Champions League. Monterrey took care of business against Atletico Pantoja. I think it was 6-1 aggregate against that Dominican Republic club. So what sort of form, though? I've heard that Monterrey has been struggling at least of late in Liga MX, fourth in the standings, but in a little bit of struggle. What should Crew be expecting to see Wednesday for this first leg?
They've been struggling these last three matches, all three losses against teams that they should have won. Pachuca and Chivas have been really, really struggling. And then they recently coming off a 2-1 loss to arch rival Tigres. That's always a bittersweet loss. So, or I should say that's more of a horrible loss just because everybody's still fuming. It's been a couple of days and we're still angry about it. It was the first game with Javier Aguirre back on the bench. He was suspended or not suspended, but he had to quarantine for 10 days for attending his son's, I think it was a wedding. Even though Aguirre is still vaccinated, he was still violating the league's protocol when it came to COVID. And so he had his assistant take over for those two games, including the one the other CCL game against Pantoja. And so I'm trying not to overreact, because when an assistant takes over, you still kind of know you. Although, they're following what, the manager has left behind, it's still the assistant. Players can maybe still try to get away with what they wouldn't under the manager. So I'm trying not to overreact, but it is still kind of a worrying, sign that they've struggled over these last three games. But to track back a little bit, thank you for having me. Thank you guys for having me. it's still a worrying sign. But I'm interested to see if they can, if they can just turn the page on the loss of Tigres in this game in Columbus, because as we all know, or at least on the Monterrey side, they've kind of owned this tournament. They've won it four times already. They've been to the Club World Cup four times and had good results there. At least what you expect from a CONCACAF side. And so it's still, as we turn the page and we start to forget about the loss to Tigres, it's now back to the pressure of, hey, you got to get this result, even though it's still on the road, and then, try to close it out at home. But I'm an open book here. Whatever you guys want to ask, whatever you guys want to know about, or whatever anybody else wants to touch on, I'm all here to talk about.
Yeah, Eddie, definitely good to have you on. Happy to see you. It's nice to have a different perspective for the opponents for the Columbus Crew coming up. But it seems like this is going to be a massive week for CF Monterrey. The fact that you guys have got this big game at Columbus on Wednesday in the Champions League, and then the game against Mazatlan to end the Liga MX season. I mean, Monterrey's in fourth place, just hanging on for that playoff spot on two goals over Santos right now. So that game on Saturday also is going to be mightily important. So I'm wondering what you think the rotation is going to look like, because obviously Monterrey, this is a team that treats this competition very seriously, but Saturday's game is huge for Liga MX standings.
Yeah, well, Funes Mori is actually suspended for yellow card accumulation. So I'm more than likely going to bet he's going to play against the Columbus Crew just because he's going to have to keep his rhythm. Also, arguably our best defender, Sebastian Vegas, who received a red card against Tigres. If anybody wants to go watch those last couple of 10 minutes, it's pretty much South American style football where all hell breaks loose and you don't know what's going on. But he received the red card in that mayhem. So he's suspended for that game. So I would expect those two, who have been pretty much vital for us all season, to play against the Crew, just because they're not going to start this weekend's game against Mazatlan. And then after that, I think I might go with a mixed squad rotation, but I think he's going to lean, I would say, maybe 60 to 70% of the players. I know on the back line, our right back is Stefan Medina. He picked up a finger injury that's keeping him out for 2 to 3 weeks. At least I last saw the diagnosis. I know he posted something on Instagram. He has a cast around his arm, or around his hand, I should say. So he's out. I think he's probably going to be out for both legs. So we're probably either going to go with Miguel Layun, who, you know, if you follow the Mexican national team, or at least, you know, from the United States perspective, when they played each other, he's more than likely going to start, or Aguirre will go with a youngster, or not a youngster, but someone that's not inexperienced in big matches, in Edson Gutierrez, to replace Medina for the injury. But that back line is starting to take a hit. I'm not sure if Aguirre is going to go with Montes or preserve him for that weekend matchup and go with either Nico Sanchez, who's a veteran, but still, I mean, he's kind of slow a little bit. He's long in the tooth, and he's showing a little bit of his age. Or is he going to go with the youngster that hasn't really played much? So I'm really curious as well to see how he makes work of the lineup. But I'm pretty sure he's going to at least two of the key figures, at least against the Crew, that Crew, you know, supporters are going to have to keep an eye on, is Sebastian Vegas, who's more than likely going to play. And he's, even though he doesn't wear the captain's armband, a lot of the supporters feel like that's our captain. And Rogelio Funes Mori, who's, you know, one goal away from becoming the club's all-time leading goal scorer. So those two are probably going to be key figures that are going to play in Wednesday's game.
And I was actually hoping to ask you a little bit about Funes Mori. This is a player who I knew from way back. This is going to sound super dumb to everybody who's listening to the podcast, but Funes Mori, way back when in Football Manager, was like the next Messi. He was so good. And getting to follow him throughout his career with Monterrey has been kind of interesting, and pretty good goal record, like you mentioned, kind of one of the all-time leading goal scorers for the club. Can you talk a little bit about his style of play and kind of what kind of dangers he brings to the pitch for your club?
Yeah, he likes to link up a lot of, like, he's not the type of striker that's going to try to dribble his way into the box. He'll link up play. He'll you know, set up the play. He'll more than likely send it to out into the wings, and then he'll make his run into the box. Like, when he gets caught, I don't, you know, out on the wing, I don't expect him to like dribble out of trouble. So he's more of a link up player. He's really good at that. He'll make his run, and more than likely he'll usually, you know, fire a shot rather than using his head. But he's very prolific. He's a prolific goal striker. He's very, I don't know how to describe him. It's just he can give you a little bit of everything. It's not like when I compare him to Vincent Janssen, who anybody that's a Tottenham Hotspur fan can remember his time there. You know, Janssen is more of a creator of a striker. He has that creator, you know, sense. And Funes Mori doesn't really have that. He just has a really good link up. He'll make that one touch pass to just get the play going, and then he'll make his run. He doesn't really have anything else to offer. I don't want to label him as a poacher just because he can do a little bit more than what a poacher does, but he's more like in between, you know, that type of striker. But still he has a lot of capabilities, but I don't know, for me, for the fan base, he's a really like lightning rod because he has a habit of missing a lot of chances. And that's the thing that the Crew can capitalize on Monterrey, is just we have a habit of missing a lot of chances, or at least the luck not being on our side, as some people will see against Tigres. It's just that's the one criticism that he has. It's just, man, can you, out of the five shots or the five, you know, scoring chances he has, he'll maybe make one, maybe two. And that's when one of the key issues, even though he's going to become our all-time, you know, club leading scorer, he can miss a lot of chances. And that's one of the aspects that the Crew can take advantage of, that if he plays on Wednesday, if he misses more than two, then that's going to give the Crew some life, and they can really take advantage of that, just because, you know, as much as I love Funes Mori, he can waste a lot of chances.
You know, you're mentioning, obviously, this is a tournament, the Champions League, that Monterrey has dominated in. But you mentioned the recent loss in Liga MX to Tigres. That's a team name that even casual Crew fans should be familiar with, because that's where they bought Lucas El Rayan for that record transfer fee in Columbus. And I think I want you to provide some perspective for Crew fans, because, you know, Lucas El Rayan is a guy who was an MLS Cup MVP for Columbus last year, you know, had a terrific scoring record when he was healthy. When he was with Tigres prior to that, he was a bench player, couldn't really get, you know, big long runs. I know he did have some injury history as well, but is there a familiarity for you with this player, with El Rayan, and what should Crew fans and MLS fans expect about kind of the gulf in class between these two leagues?
I think, at least from a Crew perspective, you're going to have someone that's familiar with Monterrey, just right, because he was there. He knows what to expect from, you know, a lot of those players that are currently at Monterrey have been a part, I would say, of the last 4 to 6 years. So during, you know, there was some crossover there where he can give players who haven't necessarily played against Monterrey or any type of Liga MX side, where he can give them a perspective what to expect. Because, you know, although it's going to be, I think the last I checked, it's maybe going to be about 30 to 20% capacity. You know, he can fill them in on what to expect, and especially against Hugo Gonzalez. Like, if he can remember his time there, he can say, hey, this goalkeeper, this is his tendencies, this is his weaknesses, this is, if you want to, you know, rattle him, you can do this. So I would think that he would feed them inside information that, even though some, you know, if they had someone that just had a cup of coffee, for example, anybody that played in Liga MX, they could say, you know, this is what they like to do, this is what, you know, their tendencies are. But I think having someone that's played in Monterrey against this team at a high level in like classical matches, that's the difference, where he can feed them information of what they'll do in big matches, or if this player usually tends to shrink in big matches that you know, that normally another player probably wouldn't have that type of information just from a regular Liga MX match.
Eddie, you and I talked when I was on your podcast last week a little bit about this, but for people that, you know, didn't catch that or haven't listened yet, just kind of the differences you see between these two leagues. And we talked about kind of, you know, the MLS growing, but that and kind of the expectations of Monterrey fans here, you know, obviously playing the MLS Cup champions, I imagine there's some familiarity or at least recognition, but obviously the Crew haven't been in this tournament for some time. So
What are kind of the thoughts of Monterrey fans as you head into this series?
We talked about this a little bit. It's just the attack, or the really good attacks that come from MLS. I mean, before I joined you guys, I saw that Jefferson Sordello joined Toronto FC. So we're always curious to see how MLS attacks, especially now Columbus Crew's attack, goes up against Liga MX's defenses. Just because, like I mentioned, when all healthy, our back line consists of four guys that can play for their national team. Jesus Gallardo can play for Mexico. Cesar Montes plays for Mexico. Sebastian Vegas plays for Chile. And Stefan Medina plays for Colombia. And so we're always, you know, eager to see how, you know, the attack emphasis, you know, the emphasis in attack that MLS likes to, I don't know. That's just how I see it. I don't know if that's a label that, or a way that you guys see it, but, you know, I feel like MLS likes to focus more on the attack rather than trying to improve a rock solid defense. And that sometimes when I see games like that, it's never really a shootout or a high scoring affair. It's usually, you know, good, steady defending. And that's where it's like, okay, that's where Liga MX might have the upper leg on MLS. Because like I said, I mean, it's not every club can have four guys at every position play for their national team. So it's just that aspect of, you know, our defense and how they compare against, you know, going up against MLS attacks that have really grown over the last decade, I would say, with the amount of like South American players that come in and show their capabilities and raise the profile of the league. But I feel like it's still, you know, the defending is still behind MLS, but still just seeing the attack. You know, when we played in 2019, we were very eager to see how the Atlanta United side, even though they were coached under, you know, Frank DeBoer, how those players that included Joseph Martinez, Pete Martinez, those guys, how would they stack up against our defending? And as you know, we were able to advance past them. So for us, it's just how the Crew's attack goes up against our defending and see what style of approach wins from the league.
And I think that's a great point that you make about kind of the focus on attacking talent. And I think part of that's because of the salary ranges that you see in Major League Soccer versus what you will see in other leagues that, you know, like Monterrey, where, you know, you have a team that, you know, maybe has a player who's of Lucas Zelarayán's talent at every position, right? Or someone at least in that ballpark, where for us, he's kind of like the crown jewel of our team. We have a bunch of other guys who make, you know, 20% what he makes. So when you are limited in what your budget is, I think maybe there's a tendency to focus on those attacking players who are going to, you know, get people into the stadium and sell shirts and things like that. And, you know, maybe you save a little bit of money on the defenders and things like that. At least I think that's how Major League Soccer historically has done it. You always sign the 37-year-old striker who, you know, was on the cover of FIFA 10 years ago, and maybe you don't focus as much on your midfield or on your goalkeeper or whatever. So we still have a long ways to go in a lot of respects, but at least our defenses are getting better to a certain degree, so it'll be interesting.
I mean, hey, go ahead, Eddie.
No, go ahead. I just wanted to follow up on
okay.
that. No, I just wanted to follow up on that and just say, no, I mean, it's, I don't know, for, I think maybe it's just like, maybe it's being Mexican and we just take pride in that, like, because the defenders for at least on Monterrey side have been those type of players that we always like attach ourselves to because they, you know, they, I'm trying to like PG, like Mexican language or Spanish language, so the way we say it, but like they're the ones that are always like echándole ganas, like they're the ones that are like, yeah, we're really attached to, like when Sebastián Vegas, even though he got the red card, he had like this fiery passion. It's like that's what we want to see from our defenders. So it's like we don't mind paying like large weight or high salaries or transfer fees from Latin America, or you know, based, you know, from a Latin American perspective. But yeah, it's always been like that for us. It's like we always attach ourselves to like defenders that like are just going to be anchors and showing fiery passion for you know, that's, I don't know, maybe that's just the Latin American flair that we all have.
Yeah, and I know Alex was saying how, oh, MLS, they get 37, 38-year-old strikers who were on the cover of FIFA 10 years ago. Guess what? One of them, and Chicharito, is the leading scorer in the league right now. He scored 5 goals in 2 games. So it's working out for some people. But, Eddie, I was kind of curious.
He scored 0 last year, so or 1 yeah, maybe.
But last year is over. Last year has happened. You know, the Crew aren't champions right now. They're defending champions, but they're not champions right now. But
okay, one thing I'm ancient history. That was 6 ancient games history. Ago. Ancient history.
Chicharito just bossing it against Miami and the Red Bulls. But Eddie, sort of just a general question about Liga MX, because this is always something I've been really curious about, and I'm sure our listeners are too, because it's been, I think, more than 10 years now since the Crew have played a Liga MX team in a competitive match. The season you guys have, you sort of have it in like these two halves, and then like the top 4 teams compete in each half to have 2 separate champions. Can you kind of explain the way that the season kind of works and why is it like that in Liga MX where you have 2 halves?
Yeah, I don't know. That's just a lot of Latin American leagues. It's just not just us. It's not like, oh, well, what are the Mexicans doing? I mean, I followed like Colombian soccer. I follow like Brazilian soccer, and other leagues in Latin America have this, I guess, routine or whatever, where they split their seasons in half. And I guess this is just, I don't know. It's always been like this. I know when I was younger, it used to be like 1 full season. But, you know, I started to realize that, you know, it started being broken into 2 separate seasons. But I don't know, I guess, I don't know what was the reason behind it, but I can tell you as a fan, I really enjoy it more as like this, just because one half of the season you can be miserable and saying what is wrong with our team. And then the next year you can quickly turn the page. And then say, and then, you know, be riding the sky high. Like, I can give you an example. Pumas were in the final last year against León, and they were, you know, they were riding a magical season because although Pumas is considered one of the big teams in Mexico, like historically, you know, they're not that anymore, just because they haven't been able to keep up with a lot of the big spending that you know, clubs like Monterrey can dish out. But like I said, you can go riding that wave of feeling, you know, of the high of reaching a league final, but then have that crashing. And I can speak to it as a Monterrey supporter, where we win the league, we win the Liguilla, we win the trophy, and then the following season it just crashes down, and you know, it's like the worst season of all time. But I don't know, I just like it that way, just because you get the weird flows that come with it, because like I said, you can be happy one half of the season and then be very angry the next, or you can be angry one half and then be happy the other. It's just, I don't know, I can't give you like a professional answer as to why they did it. I'm pretty sure it's money wise. Everything in Mexico is whatever reason it's done, it's always money behind it. I can, like, growing up, I've come to realize that whatever the Federation in Mexico does or the leagues do in Mexico, it's all behind money. But, you know, as just from a fan's perspective, I've come to really enjoy it, just because it's just a quick turnaround from either feeling really happy or really, really angry with your team to maybe, you know, having that optimism of, okay, turn the page, that was awful or that was good, let's focus on this season now. So I don't know, I know it's not the European model, but I feel like it's just become the Latin American model, because like I said, it's not just Mexico, it's other leagues in South America and I think Central America, I'm not too sure, that use this model of breaking up, you know, their seasons into 2.
Well, if it comes down to money, then you can bet that Don Garber and MLS will be following suit at some point. And I like the idea just because there's a chance for FC Cincinnati to capture not one, but 2 wooden spoons.
Great point, Bart. Great point.
No, I was about to say, and as soon as you mentioned Don Garber, I was like, okay, well, that's the whole reason why, you know, we have the Leagues Cup. We have it's going to be as much as Mexican fans want to go back to the Libertadores, it's just going to be it's inevitable that MLS and Liga MX are going to be intertwined in various matches. And I kind of like it just because from a perspective that I get to go to some of these games and don't have to fly anywhere. Or at least down to Mexico, but you know it's still going to be it's very interesting just because you know, like I said, MLS has grown over the last, I think the last 10 years, it's really taken a stride. It's no longer, I mean, early on it was had the label of a retirement league. Now you see clubs saying, you know what, no, we're going to invest in, whether it's young South American players, Central American players, now we're going to invest in young players, and then hopefully they turn out into something, which you know, some of them have. So I kind of like to see, you know, now MLS taking a different approach and then not having these really good matches against, you know, Liga MX side. But, you know, as we lead up to the World Cup in 2026, it's just something that I come to accept and say, hey, you know what? It's good. I mean, it's good for business overall. And you know, MLS has made a lot of improvements, you know, focusing on not just grabbing players who are past their primes in Europe, but bringing in young players that can bring something and just seeing how well these matchups go. But yeah, it's just something that I'm pretty sure every Crew fan already knows, just following MLS, you know, from the business angle of it. And it's just going to be more of these type of matchups going into the future.
It'll be interesting. And if and when it comes to that point, we're going to have you back on. I know there have been all this, you know, about the Franken League combination, Liga MX and an MLS, and we'll see. But for Wednesday, you know, we touched on some of the big names that, you know, fans will recognize from Europe, the Janssens, the Funes Moris, you know, the big name defenders, Montez or Vegas. Who's one player that maybe flies under the radar for this Monterrey team that Crew fans should keep an eye out on in this matchup?
Our own Argentinian Maximiliano Mesa, who has really become the heart of the Monterrey attack. Like, there was at times this season where Javier Aguirre would move him to like the left wing, but he would not generate, like he would just be on an island by himself and he would get lost. But when they decided to move him to right wing, that's when everything clicked. Like, we spent it's reported $15 million on him when Monterrey bought him 2 years ago from Independiente in Argentina. And so when they dropped that amount of money on him, everybody expected him to hit the ground running. It took some time. A lot of people were labeling him a flop. It was like, okay, let's just move on from him. Let's either sell him back to Argentina or maybe see if an MLS team will take him. But they stuck with him. And this season, we're starting to see that Maxi Mesa that helped Independiente win the Copa Sudamericana in, I think, 2017, I forget. But he helped them win. And, you know, we're expecting that Maxi Mesa, and we're starting to see him this season. So if, you know, if he's playing on that right wing, if he doesn't have Dorlan Pabon play that position for this game on Wednesday, or if he goes with Maxi Mesa, that would be one player. It's like, okay, you know these players, but this player is really you really need to like mark him. You really need to watch where he's at, because our offense goes through him. Like, he may not have like the goals, but he usually either has the assist or would have, you know, in hockey terms, that third assist or that key pass that leads to the goal. So that's one player that's like, you really have to watch out for, because when he's going, he's really effective. But the only downside with him is that he usually hits a wall around like the 70th minute mark. So, you know, that's when it's like, okay, he might drift away, or he might keep up his, you know, his form. It's always a gamble with that. But that's one player that, whether he plays this Wednesday or next week or at any point in this game, that's someone the Crew supporters should always look at and just be wary when he has the ball, because this season he's really found his form, and one that, you know, we've been wanting for like the last couple, you know, the last, I think, 2 years since we bought him. So that's one player that many people might have not heard of, or they might just know him a little bit. But that's one player that definitely they should be keeping an eye on over these two legs.
And for Crew fans, that means keeping an eye on that matchup with Milton Valenzuela to be just crucial then for the left back Crew, who I think they, you know, rightfully call him one of the top left backs in MLS. Well, he's going to have his chance to prove that here Wednesday and during these legs. Eddie, we usually do some picks. We usually wait till the end of the show to get them in. But since we're going a little bit out of order, we want to get some picks in here and hope you'll join us for them. And we'll have you a lead off if you're all right. What do you think is going to happen here in this first leg on Wednesday?
Sure. I'm gonna go with maybe a 2-2 draw, just because I'm remembering back to when Monterrey was in this competition in 2019, and they decided to go with maybe a split squad, or at least, you know, 60% of the starters when they went to Atlanta. Even though it's kind of reversed the first legs here, I'm going to go with, you know, they really didn't have that good of a performance, but, you know, they had a good lead in that first leg that led to them, you know, being able to just play cool. I think they'll go with that mindset, and then having the injuries and if they just go with one starter or two in the back, I would say 2-2 draw, and then, you know, leave it for that second leg in Mexico to see, you know, who wins out there.
All right, we've got the first shots coming across the bow. Ori Benatar, what do you got?
I think this is going to be a very tough game. Personally, I think that it's safe to label this as one of the biggest games in Crew's history over the last 10, 11 years. You can even say ever, just because they haven't played a team of this caliber, you know, very often in a competitive setting. They've only been in this competition two previous times. Lost to Toluca in the quarterfinals 11 years ago, the year after that losing to Real Salt Lake, and now they get to face a four-time champion in Monterrey. I think defense is the key in this first leg, obviously, because the Crew are hosting. Can't concede those away goals for the home leg on Cinco de Mayo, might add you, in Mexico on the 5th of May. I think the first leg will end, I'm going to say, 1-1. I think that the Crew's attack are still going to try and find their footing with some chemistry. And I think this might be the game where the Crew's clean sheet streak ends. It's been six consecutive matches without conceding a goal. So I'm expecting a 1-1 draw. I think it should be a good one on Wednesday night.
Got a couple draws. Patrick Murphy, what do you got?
I'm going to say 2-1 Monterrey. I think, just the Crew's inexperience playing in this competition, playing at this level. You know, we've talked about how good this team is, and just the gap, I think, is going to be an issue. Once MLS is able to spend similar amounts of money, I think you'll start seeing teams being consistently really competitive in this league or in this competition. But right now, I think the fact that MLS has gotten a couple teams to the finals recently is, you know, an accomplishment, but I don't see it happening consistently. I also am curious if this is the return of Vito Wormhoor, and, you know, he's been back in training and whatnot. And if you throw him in against an attack like Monterrey's can be, does that, maybe is that a little too much for him? We'll see if he gets the start, but I do think he's close to being back. So it wouldn't surprise me if he gets in there. I know Caleb Porter expects a lot from him, but I'm going to say 2-1 Monterrey.
Shame. Sam, come on. I need something a little better here.
Oh man, well, they have to figure out how to score a goal, I guess, which they did very well in Nicaragua, and then they can figure it out when they came back to the US. So yeah, I don't know. I kind of agree with everybody. Now, mind you, I have a bit of an experience with Monterrey here, because they played El Ahli in Club World Cup twice, and we've managed to lose both times. So I'm gonna go 1-1 draw, which is not great to happen at home.
Alex, help me here. Come on.
Bart, I want to help you. I can't help you in this case. I think it's going to be a 1-0 loss. I think that the Crew
struggle when they can't maintain possession and they can't kind of pass around other teams and kind of pass teams to death a little bit. And I think they're going to really struggle to maintain possession against this Monterey side, even if there is a fair amount of rotation. This is a very, very good team. And, you know, I think the Crew are really going to be up against it here. And you add to that some of the scoring woes we've seen. I think it's going to be a real challenge. I would love to be wrong, but I'm going 1-0 in this first leg. And I think it's, I think we're going to feel good about getting out of it just with 1-0.
Well, I am going to go with the Columbus Crew in this one. I'm going to buck the trend for the rest of our distinguished panel and guests. I think Crew's going to get an early one here, play on the counter and get another one up 2-0. I think Luca Zellerion is going to be, you know, pointing out a little, you know, some little issues there with the defensive line for Monterey, but they do get one. But Crew heads down to Mexico for the second leg with a 1-goal advantage. Take it to the bank. hopefully. But Eddie, really, really appreciate you joining us. For Crew fans or MLS fans, soccer fans that want to learn more, follow your work, follow your podcast. Where can they check you out?
Yeah, I usually, you know, you can find me at Twitter at Rayados90, the 90 spelled out. If, you know, I do a lot of GIF content, video clips during match days. So, like, you know, if you're interested, I always have goal highlights, anything that happens during the game. So if you're a Crew fan that wants to lurk, you know, I'll have some content for that matchup on Wednesday. So you can feel free to lurk or give a retweet or what have you. So, yeah, just follow me there and check out our podcast. There's a link there too. So, you know, my co-host and I, we do it, you know, try to do it weekly, but we do it most likely bi-weekly. But yeah, if you just check out our stuff there, it's all there.
I know we're rivals for this, you know, this matchup, but do not just lurk, Crew fans. Don't just hit the heart, smash that retweet button. Come on, be good functioning adults here. Eddie, thank you so much for joining us for this. This is a good time.
No, thank you guys for having me. It's pretty sure it's going to be a really good matchup, and we'll see, you know, the best team wins, and just hope you guys enjoy, you know, like you guys said, you haven't played a Liga MX side in almost a decade. So hopefully, you know, you enjoy that. And anybody that's like wanting to see the Monterrey Stadium next week, it's I think it's one of the best stadiums in North America. Yeah, enjoy those little scenic views that you know Fox will probably, you know, shove from time to time next week.
Oh yeah, that's the biggest crime about all this is that we can't. Well, you know, if Crew make it to this competition again and there's a matchup again next year, we're gonna have to all, you know, do a massive report podcast group trip down, and you're gonna have to show us all the finest watering holes and everything down there.
Yes. I'll reach out to the people that always tell me to go to check out these places and be like, okay, well, I'm gonna bring some people along for this. But hey, even if that doesn't happen, Monterrey is gonna be one of the host stadiums or, you know, the host cities for the World Cup in 2026. So I recommend, you know, if that doesn't happen, at least, you know, use the World Cup as an excuse just to go down there and check out that stadium, because it's one of the best.
Absolutely. Well, Eddie, thank you so much for joining us. All right, gentlemen, and we will jump back in. So, like I said, we're going a little bit out of order with this one, but we do have to kind of hit the rewind button a bit to go back to that opening day matchup. I know we're past week two in the MLS season. Crew not doing anything during it. I don't know why the schedule is the way it is. I'm going to blame it on Don Garber, but maybe not a bad thing considering how compressed this all is. And with these, you know, this big game against Monterrey coming up Wednesday, but let's go back a couple weekends ago to that scoreless draw against Philadelphia. A game that was pitting your MLS Cup champ against the supporters field or the supporters field supporters cup champ, and Columbus, you know, all in all, to get out of that scoreless draw, what are the thoughts of that? What's the takeaway from that? This is a team that at least early on has not demonstrated outside of one game down in Managua, an ability to put the ball in the net too much, but the defense looks strong against a strong club in Philadelphia, although one in some transition.
Yeah, it was an interesting game, right? You know, the Crew certainly had chances to put that game away. And I think if you go back to last year's games against Philadelphia, it was all about kind of those moments and taking advantage of them, whether it was Christian Nemeth coming off the bench to score, or I forget who had the winning goal in the 2-1 game, but just, you know, those games were tight and you could tell it was two good teams last year. And I think it had a similar feel in this one. It was just neither team had the kind of offensive quality to take advantage of one of those chances. And, you know, I think you can blame some of that on early season. And, you know, yes, both these teams had two quote unquote competitive matches, and Philadelphia probably more so going up against Saprissa. But it's still, and even Caleb Porter talked about this a little bit, it was still about 6.5 weeks into preseason. You know, you jump back to last year and the start of the season, you know, the Crew got a fantastic goal from Lucas Zelrayan in week one. Otherwise it's probably a 0-0 draw in that game. So, you know, I think as much as you would have liked to have gotten out of there with a win, or at least seen some goals from a Crew perspective, you know, I think that this is probably a fair result between two teams who I imagine are going to be in the conversation all year long for the Eastern Conference. And I think when they meet again, I think they play two more times. I meant to have the schedule up, but I don't here. You know, I think you're going to have tight games again. And I think you'll see similar level of play. I think they'll probably just be more quality finishing as the year kind of progresses and the offense kind of builds into, what it was in previous years and kind of catches up with the defense.
Yeah, they'll be playing two more times this season, both in Philly, though, after the last three matches between them were in Columbus. So I think the next game will be June 23rd in Philly, 4 days before the big Austin match over at the Q2 Stadium. But yeah, I would totally agree with what Pat said and the fact that it was a fair result. Caleb Porter said that too. He basically just described the match as these are the two of the best defenses in the league from last year and probably the two best goalkeepers from last year. Andre Blake and Aloy Room combined for 11 saves in that MLS opening day game. They were both on it in that match, and I think that was really the key there. Both teams didn't take their chances as they didn't have many to begin with, but again, that just is a statement to both teams' defenses. You know, Columbus has yet to concede a goal since late November in that first playoff game against the Red Bulls. It's been a long time since the Crew defense has conceded. So their defense is going to be the difference in this Monterrey game and in the match against Montreal and over time. But it's about the offense really getting back to clicking again. It's about rhythm. There's some stuff they have to work on the training pitch. Caleb Porter told us that right after the draw. So it's early in the season, still 33 MLS games to go. We'll see if they have any more in the CONCACAF Champions League, but I would say that it's a good way to start the year. But a fun fact will be that the Crew will be the last team to score a goal in MLS play this year and will be the last team to concede a goal in MLS play this year.
I thought it was an incredibly boring game. I don't have any like deep, you know, thoughts about the game one way or the other. I was just bored. I was bored through large stretches of that game. They looked lethargic. I don't know. It was something about the play. It just felt very not 2020 Crew. I don't know. I hope that they can start to get the rhythm. It is early season, but I don't know. I was not super impressed with what I saw out there. Even Zardes like didn't quite look like himself. He wasn't getting into positions. I didn't feel like we were generating the chances that we usually were. Some of that is the quality of Philly, but some of it also just seemed like they weren't quite up to speed yet. So I don't know. This week's midweek game is going to be really interesting. I want to see, you know, if we see that kind of tempo kick up a notch, or if this is kind of going to take a little bit longer. But I don't know.
When I think of the schedule and just kind of how erratic it's been, you know, you come out of preseason, you have that Wednesday game where you feel pretty good about it. Then you have a week off And, you know, I think it almost would have been better to have kind of that Saturday game, Sunday game after, you know, to kind of get that offensive rhythm you're talking about. Because defensively, I thought they played really well. You know, I also think not having Darlington Nagbe was big. And I thought Perry Kitchen played a really good game. But Perry Kitchen is, you know, your classic holding midfielder. He's going to disrupt. He's going to destroy was the word Caleb Porter used. But he's not going to create. And I think if, you know, Darlington's out there, you're probably moving the ball a lot quicker. Maybe you see some of those chances. So, you know, I think there's probably some reasons. But I do agree with you. They didn't look themselves, at least what we were used to towards the end of the season. And even how they looked in Nicaragua when you kind of had your pieces together. You know, and maybe you Caleb, if you're Caleb Porter, you think back on that second leg in Columbus and, you know, should you have played some more starters, some more minutes just to give them some of that game rhythm, but, you know, you also don't want to risk injury. So, you know, it's kind of do if you do, damned if you don't type of thing.
Well, and this is kind of a weird thing to say for someone who, you know, 6 months ago, we weren't really talking about that much, but it almost seems like we're missing Aiden Morris. Like I we just haven't looked the same since he went down. Like I remember even before he went down in that Esteli game, I thought we looked better than we were after. I don't know. We need someone with bite, whether that's Morris or that's Nagbe. I agree. When those guys are missing, there's something about that midfield, the tempo, that just feels, you know, like they're playing in slow motion or they're stuck in the mud or something like that. Well, we'll see how they do midweek. Maybe it was just kind of an off game, but yeah, I was not impressed.
Obviously, you know, we're looking at small sample size. And speaking of small sample size with the emphasis on small, we did see a debut for Alexandre Matan, the $1.8 million signing heir apparent, perhaps, to Lucas Zalarayan. Although, you know, with Kevin Molino's injury, with obviously the, you know, the injury to Aiden Morris, maybe Caleb Porter gets a little bit creative in his opportunity or in his you know, decisions for how to get this this young player on the field. But Ori especially, what did you take away from, you know, that little 6 minute display from Alexandre Matan and general? I know you covered him and had a story that I think was just published on the Massive Report. So what should fans expect and take away from that performance?
Well, wasn't much to take away from the performance. He only played 6 minutes, but he got a touch and Alejandro Bedoya took him out pretty quickly and Bedoya got a yellow for it. But it was nice that we were able to speak to him last weekend. It was the first time that we spoke to Matan as part of the media. So we were just trying to get to know him in general. A young Romanian kid, first time living outside of his native country, and said it was a dream to be able to be in the United States as his first country to live in outside of Romania. But he's going to bring a lot to the table in regards to speed, agility, and he's a very technical player too. And that's kind of what you would expect of somebody who's been in Europe, started when he was 10. You know, that's something that people kind of forget about the way the European system works. A lot of these great players or others, they start at the academy level when they're 9, 10, 11. So they're professionals right when they're kids. And Alexandre Matan was in Georgie Hadji's academy since he was 10 years old. So he was mentioning how he's a very independent person in general because he's had to take care of himself for more than 10 years now because of the fact that he started the academy at a young age and was away from his family for so long. So that's something that is going to be a little bit easier for him to adjust while he's here in the United States. But I think it's just interesting because the MLS, you look at some of the MVPs and some of the players that have thrived in this league. It's a lot of guys that are, you know, under 5'7", quick, agile players, good technical, creative as well, like likes of Pozuelo, Giovinco, Joseph Martinez, Maxi Morales of NYCFC. I think Matan, if he improves on his technical and his shooting ability as well, we haven't seen a lot of him. I think we'll see plenty of him in the next couple of weeks because the Crew have a very tough stretch upcoming. 6 games in 19 days. It's very 2020-esque where they literally have a game every 3 days. And I think because of the rotation, I think you'll see a lot of Alex Matan on the wing, maybe coming in to play central attacking midfielder for Zalarayan if they want to give him rest. But seems like someone who's got a good head on his shoulders. He's got a lot to learn under Caleb Porter and under the players as well. But he brings his own unique perspective to the team because he's someone on the squad that is from Europe and has been growing up in sort of the academy level, playing underneath, learning from the greatest player in Romanian football history in Georgi Hagi. So it's an exciting signing, and I'm really looking forward to see what more he can do. And I think we'll see plenty of him in the coming weeks. I know Alex has got something.
I am a huge fan of this kid. I have watched a fair amount of his YouTube highlights, and he's a super, super talented attacking player. You know, great with both feet, low center of gravity. He's got that kind of Messi-esque ability just to kind of, you know, go shoulder to shoulder with a guy and just get by him. This is someone who I think is really, really good. And you mentioned a player that he really reminds me of, and that's Sebastian Giovinco. I think this is a player that, you know, Bezpachenko felt like maybe we needed someone like that and went out and got someone with that kind of skill set. He is really, really talented. I agree that he's probably going to play out on the wing a lot more, but I would also be really, really interested to see him deployed as almost a second striker. You know, if you're down a goal, or if it's, you know, a 1-1 draw and you're trying to get that last, you know, minute result, you throw him on with 15 minutes left, have him sit just behind Zardes, you know, double up on those defenders and try to create some space there. He is really, really good and still very young. So the player who can really grow and develop with this club. And I think he's one of those players that, you know, I think you may see go back to Europe at a later date for a transfer fee.
Well, you know, another guy who addition that we're still waiting to see is Kevin Molino. I think he's kind of been the X factor, a guy that, you know, we thought and may well carve out a niche for himself in the starting 11 for Caleb Porter, but not until he is healthy. Do we have Ori or Pat, any updates on Molino's status? Can we expect to possibly see him against Monterrey or this Saturday against Montreal?
No, he's still about a month out is what Caleb Porter said over the weekend. So, you know, they're going to be careful with this. Obviously we touched on it when the injury happened that, you know, this is something that he's dealt with before, obviously battled ACL injuries last year, was in and out of the lineup with hamstring stuff. So, you know, they want to get him 100% healthy, and they realize, you know, this is a guy who, you know, was probably their biggest offseason signing. And, you know, he was expected to come in and be a starter. I mean, Bradley Wright Phillips may be a bigger name in MLS, but he's certainly not expected to come in and start over Zardes or anything like that. So, they want to get Kevin Molino 100%, get him ready to go. And I do think, you know, if you've watched this guy play in MLS over the last few years, when healthy, he's one of the more exciting attacking players in the league. And, you know, I think that only adds to this team and what they can do. You know, we were talking about their attack not looking great to start. You know, you hope obviously that they pick that up sooner rather than later. But once Molino's back, I mean, this may be the best attacking foursome in MLS with Pedro Santos, Giassi Zardes, and Lucas Zelarayán, at least on paper. You know, obviously see how it works out.
Then there's one more addition that I don't think we got a chance to touch on during our last podcast, and that was the addition of Saad Abdul-Salam. Let me make sure I got that right. Yep, Salam, I'm sorry. Player who's got some MLS experience, who Caleb Porter has some familiarity with, played at Akron, although I think they may have only overlapped by a season or so. But a guy that, you know, looks like was brought in to can play the center back position, but also can play on the outside. Good size, obviously a Gahana native. So it's always great to see a local lad get in there. But what should Crew fans expect from this addition? Is this a guy to press Harrison Awful or Harrison on that in that right wing back position, or just some more depth?
Yeah, it's kind of a mixture of sort of a depth piece, but also to have somebody else to sort of back up Harrison Awful, because Marlon Harrison is described more as sort of a project. He had time starting in the league back when he was at Colorado, but Harrison's dealing with an injury, and he's not someone that's sort of seen as like the ultimate backup to Harrison Awful, whereas Saad Abdul-Salam comes in with a little more MLS experience, MLS champion with the Seattle Sounders when he was there in 2019. And it's just another player in the club that's so happy to be in black and gold, because similar to someone like Evan Bush, who, you know, grew up around the Crew as an Ohio native, Saad Abdul Salam is the same. And he grew up in Gahanna and he was really excited to be back here. He's closer to his parents, closer to his friends. So it's going to be nice for him to have his family come out to games and his friends as well. Very excited for the new stadium. But just in terms of what he can bring to the team, I think if Harrison Afful needs a rest, there's someone you can slot in at right back. He can play right wing too, but I think the Crew just have enough guys to come in for the offensive positions where you just need somebody that can step in that fullback position. Because, you know, you look at the fullback depth right now, it's basically at the right back position, Afful. I probably put Abdul Salam second now, just ahead of Marlon Harrison. And then at the left back spot, it's basically Valenzuela and Waylon Francis. But Abdul Salam might step in at left back occasionally, but I guess it just all depends on what potential other injuries we could see during the season. And with all these games happening, I definitely expect to see some injuries every now and again. It's very hard for any team in MLS or really any team in any sport to stay fully healthy for an entire season. It's nearly impossible, especially with the congestion of games. But it's just, it's really cool and really good to see that you just have another player from Ohio back home and very excited to be part of this sort of new push for the club to become one of the top teams in MLS consistently, along with having this brand new stadium opening up in July in downtown. So Abdul Salam was very happy and was talking to the media about it and was very excited to be with the team. And yeah, he was a walk-on at Akron and played under Caleb Porter for just a small amount, not too long, but what is that now? I think five players on the Crew that used to play for Akron.
Yeah, I mean, this move to me is an indication that, you know, there's a bit of, not concern, I wouldn't say, but a realization that, you know, you need somebody who can play for Harrison Afful. You know, as good as he has been and as consistent as he's been able to be out there for the team, you know, the guy's 34 years old at this point. He's not getting any younger. You know, it doesn't look like it when he's playing, but you have to imagine that you want to get him some rest sometimes. You don't want him to pick up a longer term injury. And, you know, like Ori said, Marlon Harrison, more of a project guy. He's played a number of different positions. They want him to focus on playing right back, but it's a lot of, you know, let's get him training there consistently and kind of learning in our system. And he may be, you know, kind of a longer term successor. Whereas Abdul Salam is obviously a guy who's played in this league, as Roy mentioned, won an MLS Cup. Can play a number of positions, but I think will primarily be that backup to Harrison Afful and then step in when they need to rest him or if there's any nagging injuries, things like that. So, you know, I think it's a smart pickup. You know, like, you know, Ori accurately depicted, he wanted to be here. He was a free agent after being waived by Cincinnati. And, you know, so I think he's excited to definitely be back around. And now you kind of have a guy who can do some of the same things as Harrison Afful if you need him to step in.
Although he's about a foot taller than Harry.
He is taller, yes. That's why he can play center back.
Yeah. Well, his Crew, you know, are back in back to work. Not much rest after this game Wednesday against Monterrey, which they will win. Back to work then against the, and try this one on for size, MLS Eastern Conference leading Club Foot Montreal.
Club foot. You have to remember the lowercase D foot. And E.
Clubbed foot. They're Montreal Impact. Somehow, this is one of the worst rebrands in MLS in a league that it just specializes in terrible rebrands. It looks like the what's the community college in community called, but it looks like their flag and folks can look it up. Sam will make it the image for the
gray snowflake
for the podcast when you download it. There you go. I thought the Chicago Fire rebrand really set the bar for, you know, what sort of logos can you make with the, you know, quick graphics available in Microsoft 2007 PowerPoint. But CD or CF Montreal or whatever the letter they're rebranded now. This is a pretty awful logo, but the team has not been complete garbage, at least so far this season. They coming off a 4-2 win against Toronto FC. You love to see that. And then to open the season, and then drew last weekend with Nashville, a team that, you know, have been so strong defensively, but managed to get a couple past them. What are your, you know, immediate thoughts or analysis of this this new Montreal squad?
I think it's a team that is really enjoying playing together, you know, now under new leadership with Wilfred Nancy as the manager after Thierry Henry left the club. I think, you know, the expectations for them was to be one of the worst teams in the Eastern Conference, because a lot of people were like, well, they don't have Henry as their manager. They don't have, you know, as many good players, but they've got a lot of guys coming into the system that are helping them a lot. And one guy to watch in particular is going to be Mason Toy, this striker who scored two great goals in the first two games of the season, 22 years old from the United States, about a market value of 600,000. So Montreal potentially with a steal there at striker. And they've just got a team that I think is enjoying playing together a little bit more. You know, six goals in their first two games is impressive. Weren't able to hold the lead against Nashville. Nashville's had two draws now coming back from 2-0 down. So that might be more of something that Nashville's doing in terms of their rhythm rather than Montreal blowing leads. But the likes of Mihailovic and Kito up top, Victor Wanyama, Premier League quality CDM back when he was at Tottenham as well. So you got two games in a row for the Crew against former Tottenham legends in Vincent Janssen and Victor Wanyama. So, but I think it should be an interesting game. But obviously the big thing to know about this one is it's in Florida, which is the Crew's second home, because Club de Foot Montreal can't play in Canada still, so they're playing their matches in Fort Lauderdale at Inter Miami's home. And there is the comparison of logos Alex was showing us on the video Zoom. The City of Bloomington logo there. I think, is that the community logo, Alex?
No, that's just the City of Bloomington, Indiana, right?
Which Bloomington?
Or which one is?
I have to do more digging to determine that, but. I'll get back to you, Ori. Was just some crap I pulled up on my phone.
Well, either way, the logo is whatever you want to think of it. I don't mind it that much. It's not the best, but it should be a good game. And Columbus continuing this sort of back and forth between playing games in Ohio and playing games in Florida, because after they play DC on May 8th, they're going to go play Toronto on May 12th, which is going to be in Florida. So, but I think the May 1st game will be interesting. You know, Montreal off to a good start this season. It's an important game for the Crew to get this rhythm going and also to start off strong on the road. Obviously, you know, MLS Cup champions and all, but this team didn't get a victory on the road in a true road game last season.
It is the City of Bloomington, Indiana. I keep looking at that logo and I keep thinking that if you buy a Canada Goose jacket on wish.com, that logo is going to be stitched on the sleeve of your jacket when it arrives in Central Ohio. So pretty bad team, not so bad. So good for them. At least there's some sort of a silver lining for those poor fans up in Montreal.
I honestly think that this is one of those MLS teams where, you know, there's a strong start to the season. I think they took advantage of Toronto playing in the Champions League. And we've seen that for years now, teams struggling out of the gates that are playing in Champions League. And then I didn't see the game against Nashville last week, but obviously had the lead and let it go. To me, this is an MLS team who, you know, like Ori said, on paper isn't expected to do much. I envision them, and, you know, maybe they are able to take advantage of the Crew in the same way, but I envision this as a team that kind of, you look back at the beginning of the year or end of the year and you're like, remember when Montreal was at the top of the East, like 4 weeks into the season or something, and now they're not in the playoff picture. I just don't see a lot. You know, losing Thierry Henry, not that he had done great things there, but, you know, you just lose your continuity right before the start of the season, right before preseason, really. And, you know, there's just not a lot. I do like Mihailovic. That was a nice get from Chicago. But, you know, Mason Toy is a good player. I don't think he's going to end up being, you know, the top goal scorer in the league. You know, and just watching them that first game, I was like, this is interesting, but I felt more that it was Toronto struggling than Montreal really doing a ton of good things.
Yeah, that's a good point. That was a player I wanted to bring up, Patrick. Jordy Mihailovic, you know, former Chicago Fire player, crew might recognize him, has, you know, been in and out and talked about for the national team and Greg Berhalter, but hasn't really been able to, you know, solidify a spot for himself. But just 22 years old, it has always seemed, you know, at least when I've watched him with Colorado, is an impact player. But I know he kind of would fall in and out of favor with the management there. And of course, just, you know, garbage organization. So take that for a grain of salt. Do you think that this, you know, this new scenery, you know, being in Montreal vis-a-vis Florida, is going to be enough to turn his career around? And is he somebody that can cause some trouble for Columbus?
Yeah, I like him a lot. And I liked him at Chicago. You know, wasn't always surrounded by the most talent, as you've mentioned so eloquently there, Bart, in terms of their organizational structure. But I think he's a good talent. You know, I think he is a guy who maybe not a regular U.S. national team player, still young. So we'll see how his career continues trajectory. But, you know, he could be, you know, one of those regular Gold Cup type of players or something like that, with what he's shown so far. But yeah, I think it was a good get for them. You know, they spent a good amount of TAM or GAM or some kind of AM on him, I believe. So, you know, they had to pay to get the homegrown kid out of Chicago. But, you know, I think it's a good move. Jam. they paid their jam.
Yeah.
Bam, bam, cam.
He got jammed.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's definitely a guy I think the Crew need to be aware of. You know, just a solid young attacking playmaker, American too, which you don't see a ton of at that position.
My favorite thing about Tam and Gam is you can legitimately make up something like Jam and come up with like an acronym for it and tell it to another MLS fan and they won't know if you're lying or not.
They'll yeah, joint no allocation money. They spent $150,000 joint allocation money to acquire $200,000 general allocation money in order to get $300,000 broke allocation money.
There you go. It was a good deal. You don't know if that's real or not. You have no idea.
It was. The trade happened last night. I saw it. It was great. It was a good deal.
There you go. There you go.
What is the exchange rate? That, though, is the question.
4%, obviously.
Yeah, but and then Don Garber has to cut a little bit off the top, though, too. You got to take that into account.
How long do we think until all transfer funds are distributed and collected and dispersed using some sort of Don Garber controlled cryptocurrency?
Oh, like, that's what
there's going to be like about. A Garber. Yeah. There's going to be like a Garber coin, right?
And it's going to grow up.
It's going to go up and then Seattle's going to buy a player at the peak and then Garber's going to flood the money onto the market and it's going to crash right before the Crew can sign somebody and we're going to have to pay some ridiculous exchange rate and, you know, he'll be like taking a cut of it, right? There's going to be some like slush fund. There's going to be a slush fund set up for Soccer United marketing and they're going to have like $10 billion in this like stupid coin. It's gonna happen, guys.
They're all right. The only thing that's different about that is there's a currency coin, but everything else you're describing happens already in MLS. but you know, getting back to the game, you know, you mentioned it, Ori, that this is about to be a brutal slog for Crew. What was it? What, 6 games in 19 days?
That is correct.
So this is something and you know, a competition again that we think that Crew want to compete in that Champions League. So you have to imagine that Caleb Porter is fielding at least a pretty strong team. If you hope to advance, you win against Monterrey at home. Then you take on a Montreal team a few days later as best in the East. Take that for what it is. What do you expect to see from a rotation from Crew in this game Saturday?
Well, I did get your question, Bart, despite the potential roboticism / poor connection over there. It's just the life of Zoom as it is. We're almost at Saucy Brewworks, which, by the way, guys, Saucy Brewworks is the best bar in Columbus and place to be in the world. Saucy Brew Works. If your brew works, then why not be saucy with it? But anyways, rotation wise, I think we should expect to see most of the key starters for Columbus. I think in that Monterey game. Oh, shut up, Alex. You're booing me in the chat. I think the fact that Monterey is going to be a really competitive game, I think, is going to give Caleb Porter a chance to really get a lot of the key starters in there. I mean, the only potential starter you don't have in the lineup is really Kevin Molino and then Aiden Morris, obviously long-term injury, but everybody is back. You should see Nagbe and Artur together again. Zelarayan, Zardes, probably Diaz in that right wing spot with Pedro Santos on the left. Defense should be fully healthy. We'll see about Vito Wormhoor. That's definitely something that we're going to ask Caleb Porter about on Tuesday before we talk to him for the match on Wednesday. So I do think that we should expect the strongest lineup possible on Wednesday. And then for the Montreal game, maybe a bit of rotation. You can bring MLS veterans in like Perry Kitchen in midfield that can help out. Maybe give Derek Etienne a start in that game in Florida. Maybe you do see someone like Matan or Bradley Wright Phillips get a looking. So, and the thing that's going to make the stretch really tough is the fact that there's only going to be two games in Columbus. This one here on Wednesday against Monterey, and then the match on May 8th against DC. And then after that May 8th match against DC, there's not going to be a game in Columbus till May 29th. So this team are going to have to become road warriors quickly. But that just is a testament to the Crew's depth. They can get veteran guys like Kitchen and Bradley Wright Phillips in the lineup for the Montreal game in order to keep that focus on Monterey, because that game on Cinco de Mayo, the second leg in Mexico in the Champions League, that is going to be a massive, massive match to test the Crew's, strength on the road, because playing in Mexico, the altitude's not too bad. It's a little under 2,000 feet, but still there is a bit of altitude. That's really a test to be able to play in another country, in a country like Mexico, with a potential hostile environment and against such a good team and such a nice stadium. So that match on May the 5th will be huge. And that's why I think we will see the rotation of midweek game, strong lineup, weekend game, little bit of rotation.
I'm wondering is, and I haven't crunched the numbers yet, are Crew still with a win? Could they still secure one of those U.S. Open Cup spots, or are they out just by virtue of they're not going to get enough games that they could accumulate enough points to nail down one of those four MLS spots?
There's no Open Cup for the time being. They postponed it. Or canceled it for the spring. I don't remember how they phrased it. Basically, they realized that having 16 teams wasn't how the Open Cup should be played. So for now, they're not going to play it, but there is opportunity to potentially do it later in the year when it may be safer to include more teams and travel and all that stuff. If it were up to me, and I originally misread the press release when it came out and thought this was the way they were doing it, I would just say, let's push it to next year. Let's come back with a full Open Cup the way, you know, we want to do it. But the good news is the Crew don't have to worry about those silly rules that you were just mentioning there, but at least not for now.
That is good news. I would not be surprised to like come back and hear that we are going to have, we're going to go with four teams. And what do you know? Oh, it's going to be LAFC, Seattle, Atlanta, and let's go with LA Galaxy. There you go. Or maybe they'll go with Inter Miami. Maybe that instead of Galaxy, it'll just depend
on. Are you sure? Sure they don't want to put Austin in? I mean, they just won 3-1 in Colorado.
Good point. Good point.
Austin, MLS Bart, Cup contenders.
Bart, Sam, how dare you? Those straws were drawn at random. No one was watching, but they were drawn at random. Scouts honor, Bart.
Remember, they were drawn at random.
It just turns out there were four different straws.
That was envelopes, not straws. From. Remember that?
Yeah.
New MLS fans will never know about some of the weird transfer sagas that took place in like the late 2000s, early 2010s, where it was insane. Yeah.
Anyway. When when the commissioner of the league would come on to midfield for a team, you know, in the middle at halftime and reveal a transfer signing in front of the stands. Oh no, that doesn't happen. That's not a normal league thing to do. Normal thing that commissioners are supposed to do. There's additional duties as required, as they say. Well, fellas, we've gone on for a little bit over an hour. So unless there are any objections, I would say we should probably get some picks in here and then be able to wrap it up. And then, you know, we can continue the conversation about who has the best copy for our friends and sponsors, Saucy Brewworks. Get sauced responsibly at Saucy Brewworks. And I also do want to remind everybody, while you guys are thinking about your picks, that you should like and rate and give 5 stars to this podcast. If you've got complaints about my delivery here, pinch hitting for Brian Phillips, I don't want to hear it. I'm a sensitive man. I'm a sensitive boy. Just only say nice things and compliments about it. If you've got complaints, email those to Patrick Murphy directly. Sam is going to include his email address in the description for this podcast. But again, only 5 stars. Tell all your friends and say that I did a really nice job. It's really going to do miracles for my self-esteem.
And also a new service that Pat is offering is if you cannot find the crew game on television, he will let you know what channel
That's a good point.
Anytime. So yeah. just tweet him. Just tweet Murph.
This was going to be a part of my prediction. So we'll get there.
Okay. All right. I just spoiled something. Okay.
We won't let you spoil it too much longer. We won't hold you back, Pat. I know this is burning. You got to let it out. So let's hear it. You lead us off with the picks, Patrick Murphy.
Well, first, as Alex touched on, there seems to be mass confusion from crew fans about where you can watch crew games when they're not on national television, because there's a whole like 7 national television games this year. Bally Sports, which is what is listed on the crew website, is the exact same channel as Fox Sports Ohio. It just has a different name. Now, I know there's also this whole issue of people that have cut the cord and have certain channels or have certain streaming services that don't have Fox Sports Ohio. And as I ranted for far too long on last year's podcast, do yourself a favor, find a friend that has cable, ask them for their password and username, and watch the crew. And if you don't want to do that, and you're not comfortable going to a bar yet, which is fine, then you clearly don't care about the crew that much anyway, and just want to bitch on Twitter. So, you know, there are ways to handle this situation. But the main thing is Bally Sports, exact same channel as you watched the crew last year, if you watched the crew last year. And if you did it, and you're Chris LaMacchia or one of the other people that like to complain on Twitter, I just don't think you care that much. There's ways to watch the crew, plenty of ways to watch the crew.
Did we get a pick in there?
2
score.
2-1 crew win. It'll be a largely reserved lineup, but I don't think Montreal's very good, as I detailed earlier.
All right, 2-1 win. And again, if you're not sure if crew games are available on your streaming service, just tweet _Pat_Murphy. Correct. I wanted to make sure I got that. And there's another underscore afterwards, isn't there? It's 3 underscores, yeah. Isn't it?
If you're not following me on Twitter already, what are you doing? I mean, let's be honest here.
But again, tweet him. He's got the list of all the streaming services, where they're available, how you can watch them. In addition to, he'll give you a cable password. He's a great guy like that and a great friend, especially if you tweet him a lot about it. Ori, what do you got? What's your pick for this one?
Yeah, Pat's going to start kicking names and taking ass pretty soon with all this TV nonsense. So everybody stop complaining or Murph's going to curse you out. Bally Sports on Saturday. Wednesday's game is on Fox Sports 2, not 1, because the Cubs are playing the Braves Wednesday night. That's very important to realize. So Fox Sports 2 on Wednesday. But I'm about to pull my pick off, and I think it's only appropriate because it's Club de Foot Montreal. Let's pull a Wes Welker. And just get some foot puns in there. I think the crew will put their best foot forward, get their toes in the water, and get a leg up on the competition and get themselves a 2-0 victory. What? Are you going to boo me again?
Boo!
Oh yeah, there you go, there you go. I'm trying so hard here with my saucy brewworks and my best foot forward, so all y'all can shut up. 5-star rate, Bart's hosting, my bad puns, Pat's complaining about TV people complaining, Alex's cynicism about everything, and then of course we've got Sam, the best producer in the world. I think the Crew are going to win 2-0. I think Florida is their second home. This is the place where they win games outside of Columbus, and I think they're going to be able to kick club to foot in the club de butt.
Can I just say that I think it's funny that the Crew's broadcasting rights are owned by a pinball company. Like, I just think that's amusing, right? Like, what? Bally Sports is like that pinball company, right?
Are they?
Bally's that pinball company.
No, didn't they used to be the same company? Didn't they used to be the fitness company?
Yeah, it's all the same. It was a casino. There's casinos. They own a bunch of different things. Bally pinball machines are the best, man. I just think that's great, you know? Watch a Crew game, play a little.
I'm currently watching Bally Sports for a different team, so I know that it exists.
There you go. Yeah, I think that the Crew will do well against Montreal. I think that, you know, we're looking at, I'm going to go with 3-1. I'm feeling good about it. You know, Monterey is a very good team. I don't want that prediction to come off as saying that the Crew are not an amazing team. They are. And they're going to show that against Montreal. I think they're going to bounce back well, and it's going to be a great performance. I think we're going to see, I'm going to say a hat trick from Zardes. I'm going to say a Jossie Zardes hat trick. Jossie Zardes hat trick. And then some fluky goal on a set piece for Montreal. Who cares? Nobody likes them anyway.
All right, Sam, what you got?
I'm not going to talk nearly as much like I have done this entire podcast. So I see your 3-1, Alex, and I raise you 4-0, Crew.
Ooh. Mm. Who scores?
Vito hat trick.
Vito hat trick. I mean, Lucas will probably score because he seemed pretty frustrated in the last game. I think Lucas will score first, so they'll start covering him, and Zardes will start getting open. And then if Matan plays, he probably gets at least one.
I like it.
See, I was gonna pull that there. I'm gonna go with the Sam pick because that sounds. Except I've got a Giassi brace in there, and if it's not Matan, it will be a Josh Williams bicycle kick for the dagger.
I'm outside the box.
Yeah. I will say this. I wanted to bring this up when we were talking Philly, but forgot. I do think that Lucas Zelrayan is going to have to learn how to play as a marked man this year. And I think Philly proved that you can mark him more or less out of a game. Now, you have to have the guys to do it, and Philly definitely does. But I do think he's going to see a lot more attention, and they're going to have to, you know, scheme ways to get him the ball in space. He was going out to the wing a lot more against Philly, where he's not as dangerous just to get on the ball. So I'll be very interested to see how he handles year two in MLS after being newcomer of the year and obviously the MLS Cup MVP.
Yeah, Philly had three guys around him like all game long. He was getting a ton of pressure. That might happen all season long. So that's why I think it's also important where you have someone like Matan, maybe even Parente to step in at that central attacking midfield spot to have that depth. Because if Lucas Zelrayan is just not getting any chances to be creative because defenses are just collapsing on him, you've got guys to step in that these defenses don't know a lot about in Parente and Matan.
Yeah, and that's another Kevin Molino will help out once he's back, you know, take some of that attention away as well.
Well, I know I am looking forward to being around you four guys and our friend Brian Phillips, who will be rejoining us. And we will be back at some point, maybe not this next episode, but in a few at Saucy Brewworks at 443 West 3rd Avenue. Again, great sponsor for the Massive Report. We love them. We love their beers. We hope you love them too. You will just try them along with their pizzas. They are dope. So, gentlemen, for Sam, for Ori, for Patrick, for Alex, and again, big shout out to Eddie from Rayados 90 Podcast for joining us to give us the scouting report for Monterrey. This is Bart saying bye, buddies. We'll catch you next week.